World News Today, brought to you by Abril Corporation, world's largest manufacturer of radio phonographs with automatic record changers. This program is presented in behalf of Abril dealers all over America by shortwave broadcast, direct from important overseas stations and leading news centers in our own country. CBS reporters are waiting to bring you first-hand news from the world's political and battlefronts. Now, here's Douglas Edwards.
The German army continues its retreat across the Rhine today, blowing big bridges across the river to prevent Allied armies from crossing after the enemy troops. But American and Canadian troops are moving quickly toward bridges still standing, and the German radio a few minutes ago said the Americans are bringing up rubber boats northwest of Dusseldorf, apparently intending to cross the Rhine as speedily as possible. 1,000 American heavy bombers, 500 fighter planes were over Germany in daylight today, despite bad weather, attacking marshaling yards and industrial plants. The Royal Air Force also took a hand in the daytime bombing. Its target was a communications town near Gelsenkirchen. For the first time in 9 months, German planes have bombed and strafed sections of England. The Germans say the Russians have broken through German defenses in a drive flanking Stettin on the northeast, and that one Soviet column is 13 miles from the Baltic coast farther east. B-29s have bombed Tokyo again in very great strength, and on Iwo Jima, the Marines have almost split the Japs on the northern end of the island. And now we hear from one of Columbia's correspondents in the field. Admiral takes you to Supreme Headquarters in Paris, Charles Collingwood reporting.
The German front before the Rhine is cracking fast. The First Army, or rather armored elements of it, have broken out of their bridgehead across the Erft and cut their way to the Rhine north of Cologne. First Army infantry is closed to within 2.5 miles of the city. The Ninth Army has driven northeast 8 or 9 miles from Krefeld to reach Hamburg across the river from Duisburg. Troops of three armies are crowding up to the banks of the mighty river. The Germans have already lost 52,000 men as prisoners, and they're fighting now to get as much of the rest as they can across the river. The German rearguard action boils down to an attempt to hold on to the Rhine crossings. For the rest, it is chaos, with everything German trying to get across the river. As things stand this afternoon, about the only decent bridge the Germans have left is the one at Wesel, and that is exactly where their stiffest resistance is. Wesel is up in the north on the Canadian Army sector. Between there and Cologne, there is only one bridge left at Hamburg, across the river from Duisburg, and that is threatened by the 84th Division in Hamburg's outskirts. From there on down, the Germans have blown the bridge at Erdingen, the three bridges at Dusseldorf, and at Cologne itself, the only one left standing is the great Hohenzollern Bridge, and that has been pretty badly knocked about by our bombing. Of course, there are other ways to get across a river than by a bridge, but there aren't any as quick. And the Germans want to get across quick. How much they will get across, or to put it in reverse, how much we will capture, is a question it might be well to be pessimistic about. In the last 9 months, the Germans have developed to a fine art, the business of getting out of traps. And all the indications are that they will get most of their stuff out of this one. But even granting that, what is happening now before the Rhine is a disaster to German arms. This is Charles Collingwood in Paris, returning you to New York.
And now some news direct from the fighting field. For a direct report from the American Ninth Army front, Admiral takes you somewhere in Germany, Howard K. Smith reporting.
This is the American Ninth Army. The Battle of the Cologne Plain has turned into a rather large-scale mopping up of disorganized German forces on this side of the Rhine. If a week ago the situation could be characterized as a thin American bridgehead across the Ruhr, it is tonight a rapidly dwindling German bridgehead this side of the Rhine. The Nazi bridgehead is caught in the pincers of the Canadians driving down from the north, and this American army advancing upward from the south. In the past 24 hours, the German bridgehead has been reduced by 9 miles on this end of the pincers alone. Today's push by the Ninth Army brings the Hamburg Bridge over the Rhine River under control of our artillery, and it leaves only two other Rhine bridges to the retreating Germans, one at Wesel in the Canadian sector, and the other down at Rheinberg in the American sector. Following these surging troops today has been a ticklish proposition. I've passed through frontline villages without a single American soldier in them. Sometimes it's hard to say to whom these towns belong. They've been neglected by everybody. There are no German troops around, and none of ours have showed up. The citizens, though, have taken it on themselves to surrender without being asked, hanging white flags from every roof in town. One place, the striped flag of the German Republic was being draped over the village church. In the farmyard, you see the hides and entrails of freshly slaughtered cattle, which the retreating Wehrmacht took with them. There are splintered German pockets scattered all over the fluid front. The other day, I was shot at four times by snipers. Yesterday, I lost my driver and my Jeep. In a village near the Rhine, the driver went off to reconnoiter the neighborhood. He hasn't returned yet, and I've had to report him missing in action. This is Howard Smith returning you now to New York.
There'll be more news in just a moment. If you've wished for more oven room in your kitchen range, you'll be interested in Warren Sweeney's message about an electric range with two ovens.
The Admiral electric range will have two full-sized ovens. Think how grand it'll be on holidays or any day when you're preparing a really big dinner to have two ovens. Your turkey or roast could be cooking at the same time as your rolls and pastries. Admiral, from recent surveys, found that most housewives wanted a larger oven in their next electric range. So Admiral went one better, and you'll get two full-sized ovens. And only in the Admiral electric ranges will you get Flexo Heat. Flexo Heat is the Admiral feature that will make it so easy to get just the right amount of heat needed for any cooking operation. As easy, in fact, as turning on and off your water faucet. And it's going to be a case of love at first sight when you see the modern styling and distinctive beauty of Admiral electric ranges. So when victory makes possible the production of civilian goods, see the various new models Admiral will offer. For the best in cookery, use electricity. For the best in electric cookery, choose an Admiral. Now here once again is Douglas Edwards.
The light heavy bombers, British and American, attacked Germany again today. For this news and other developments, Admiral takes you to CBS London. Larry Lesser reporting.
With one of the greatest Allied victories of the war being forged on the western banks of the Rhine, the Germans have countered with a new air offensive against England. We heard the familiar sound of the sirens in London last night, but it hasn't been much of an air offensive so far. Yet they were real planes, not robots, and six of them were shot down. The raid came as enough of a surprise to make propaganda for the Germans, a sign that the Germans are worrying about the morale on the home front as well as the morale of their troops. Britain knows enough about the effects of air warfare to realize that the unprecedented Allied air bombardment of Germany is shaking the grip of Nazi discipline in the Reich. Germany's disastrous military situation needs no emphasis. Where we fought for the city of Aachen street by street, the industrial cities of Krefeld, Neuss, and Mönchengladbach have fallen with little more than a push, a certain indication that the bulk of the German army is no longer morally fit to make each of these into a minor Stalingrad. London is now aware that in addition to all her other troubles, Germany is now suffering from an entirely new labor problem, in which a manpower shortage exists side by side with unemployment. You see, the great German comb out of men for the army has produced an acute shortage of skilled labor. But at the same time, there are large numbers of unemployed in Germany, deprived of their jobs by the bombing of factories, shortage of raw material, and the lack of transport. The number of foreign workers in Germany has been estimated at 12 million. The Nazi theory has been that such a mass of more or less unfriendly workers was not dangerous if they could be kept under close supervision. Now that these foreigners are thrown out of work, they form a potential guerrilla force. Already reports have come from neutral countries of Allied paratroop agents being dropped into Germany to organize these people the way they organized the underground in France. And there are rumors now that the Germans are attempting to get rid of this dangerous mass by organizing the foreign workers into slave regiments to fight against their rescuers or be shot in the back. But these foreign slaves may yet turn out to be the Trojan horses of World War II. And this is Larry Lesser returning you now to Admiral in New York.
A large force of superfortresses, possibly more than 200 planes, blasted Tokyo for more than an hour and a half today, leaving fires burning in the 11th raid by the giant planes on the Jap capital. The Marianas-based bombers blasted Tokyo exactly a week ago with more than 200 planes in the biggest raid to date on the capital, and it is possible that today's pounding is even heavier. In the Philippines, General MacArthur made his opening bid yesterday for the major port of Legazpi and air bases on southeastern Luzon, by sending troops ashore at dawn on two nearby islands, the 19th and 20th invasions of the Philippines campaign. The planes and men were protected by warships, and Yanks of the veteran American division seized Tikau and Burias in the Cebuyan Sea in a move to force the Japs either to quit Luzon's Bicol Peninsula or face destruction there. And now for other news from the Pacific War Zone, Admiral takes you to CBS Pearl Harbor, Tim Limmert reporting.
On Iwo Jima, the slugging Marines are slowly pushing toward the north end while encountering heavy resistance. Our forces are now just a bare 500 yards from the northern extremities of Iwo, but the fighting in the next couple of days promises to be as tough as that met so far. In the center of the line, the 4th Marine Division pushed forward in a general advance of 200 to 400 yards yesterday, as the Marines on the right flank were having their problems with extremely heavy enemy resistance. As the Japs get pushed further into a corner, they fight more savagely in the jagged terrain that makes up the northern part of Iwo. The fighting is in such an area that it is difficult for our carrier-based aircraft to aid the Marines by blasting the Japs without endangering our own positions. However, despite this toughness in the final phases of the campaign, it seems that it will be only a few more days before the island is secured. This does not mean that the Japs will be through, as we have learned on the other islands in the Pacific. They will continue to hole up in isolated pockets for a long time, and Marine patrols will have to slowly go into these pockets and root them out. Thus, it appears that the curtain is going down on the toughest battle of the entire war, and the blood-soaked sands of Iwo Jima have changed hands from the Japs to us. The control of Iwo Jima is a damaging threat to the Japs, as from here we are scarcely 750 miles from Tokyo. From its airfields, we'll be able to send fighters and bombers to bomb the homeland cities. It may be that the air war against Japan varies greatly from the air war against Germany. The major part of it may, for the next couple of months, come from the carriers. But these mobile airports have to have bases where their planes can be repaired. In Iwo Jima, we have such a base. Here in Pearl Harbor, hope for General Millard Harmon is waning, despite the fact that the Navy and the Army have conducted one of the most extensive sea searches since that for Amelia Earhart. There has been no sign of the missing plane that was last heard from on its way back from the forward areas. This is Tim Limmert at Fleet Headquarters in Pearl Harbor. I return you to Admiral in New York.
Fifty-six heroes of Boston and the Battle of the Bulge have just been brought home by the War Department to tour our war plants and tell workers something about what it was like. Today, Admiral presents one of these from the Buffalo, New York area in the first radio broadcast to be made by any of the 56 heroes. He will be interviewed by Bill Slocum, Jr.
The rather inelegant word nuts has within the last few years moved into the American language and taken a position of semi-respectability. 2 months ago, this same short word moved into the American history books, where it will stay for all time. An American general, Anthony C. McAuliffe by name, chose the word as the only polite yet logical answer to a German demand for surrender on the snows of Bastogne. You don't often meet a person who is actually at hand in an exchange of historic diplomatic discourtesies, but with me today is Corporal John H. Shaw, a young radio man from Franklinville, New York, and the corporal was there. Corporal, tell us first how you got to Bastogne.
We had just come out of Holland after 70 days on the line, and we were resting in the rear. They just threw us on a lot of trucks and sent us into action around Bastogne.
That was the German breakthrough, the Battle of the Bulge, wasn't it?
Yes. They just moved us up, told us to dig in, and the Germans would be along shortly.
Were they right?
Nobody's ever been righter.
The stories we got at home about Bastogne said you were completely surrounded by Germans.
By December 22nd, we were. That was when we saw two Germans walking down the road carrying a white flag. I was at the command post when the Germans were brought in. They demanded to see the general.
Did they see him?
Nope. Our captain told them he was busy and what was on their mind. Then they presented their general's demand for surrender.
That demand, as I remember it, said the Germans had half their army on hand, and if the Americans didn't surrender the town, it would not correspond with the well-known American humanity, because German artillery fire would kill a lot of civilians.
Yes, that's right. It was very touching.
Well, what happened then?
Well, we just let the Germans, a colonel and a major, stay there and freeze like the rest of us, while the captain took the demand back to our colonel. The colonel passes on to General McCullough.
How long did that take?
About 2 hours. The Germans were beefing their heads off about the coal. Finally, the colonel came back and I watched him read the answer to the Germans.
Exactly what was that answer, Corporal?
It said, December 22nd, 1944, to the German commander, Nuts, the American commander.
Were the Germans surprised?
No, they knew we'd never surrender. I think the language got them, though.
Corporal John Shaw, I can think of no better way to close this interview than to read an excerpt from a mimeographed note General McAuliffe distributed on Christmas Eve. After telling the 101st Airborne Division about the surrender incident, the general closed his message with, "We are giving our country and our loved ones at home a worthy Christmas present. And being privileged to take part in this gallant feat of arms, are truly making for ourselves a Merry Christmas." Now back to Doug Edwards.
A major in the Army Nurses Corps who escorted nurses liberated in the Philippines back to this country is now at our microphone in Washington. For an interview with her, Admiral takes you to CBS Washington, Tris Coffin reporting.
You're going to hear one of the most warm and human stories of the war. The story of 68 American girls who stood beside our fighting men at Bataan and Corregidor. We're prisoners of the Japs for 3 long and lonesome years, and were liberated 3 weeks ago. Major Juanita Redmond of the Office of Air Surgeon, AAF, will tell the story. She served on Bataan and escaped to Australia just before the Philippines fell. She wrote the book, I Served on Bataan. Many of the nurses who have returned to the States are personal friends of hers. Major, when was the last time you saw these girls?
That was on April 29, 1942. When we received the news that the girls had been freed, I was assigned to fly out and assist in their air evacuation to the mainland. I was at the field in Kwajalein when the 2 great transport planes came roaring down the field. Really, it's very difficult for me to describe my reaction at seeing them. Emotionally, I felt that a big cry would be helpful. But I couldn't break down. There was too much to do. It seems as though I saw every face within a second and could feel what each had gone through. The girls were excited and laughing. They kept saying, "Pinch me, I'm still dreaming," or "It's too good to be true."
Major, did the nurses look much different than when you had seen them last in the Philippines?
Yes, they did. And in an unusual way, they looked more mature, as if they had learned a great deal. They were all thinner, although many looked trimmed and very streamlined.
What was the high point of the trip home, Major?
The night of the dance at Hickam Field, the Army Air Station at Honolulu. The girls had freshly pressed uniforms and had a chance to visit the beauty shops. They were so proud of the way they looked that they wanted to walk to the dance rather than to go in cars. At the close of the dance was the only time I saw the girls show any sign of emotional stress or strain during the trip. The orchestra played God Bless America. The tears started rolling down their cheeks, and the band followed with the Star Spangled Banner. Everyone stood at attention. The girls were tugging at their coats, trying to pull themselves together and keep from crying. But the big tears formed in their eyes and rolled down their cheeks. It was an impressive moment. Even the musicians had a difficult time to keep from crying themselves. Many nurses remarked afterwards, "We've waited over 3 long years to hear that song."
Did they tell you how they were treated at Santo Tomas, the concentration camp?
There were many and varied stories. They told of their work, and especially in the last few months when malnutrition among the 6 civilians increased their problems. The chief complaint was that they didn't get enough food.
Well, what do they want to do now?
Well, first they want to see their families and friends. They want to rest, rehabilitation, and to catch up with normal living again. But a large number of them want to get back overseas. I told them they'd seen enough action and probably would stay in the States for a while. They were indignant. "What do you mean?" they asked. "Well, we've been resting for 3 years. We want to get back to work." To me, in those few words, is the greatest challenge I've ever heard to the available civilian nurses who have not as yet volunteered for the Army Nurse Corps. Their country needs them.
Thank you, Major Redmond. 2 hours ago, Undersecretary of War Patterson made a radio appeal to the Detroit strikers to return to work. By his side were 2 veterans of the heavy fighting at Bastogne. Judge Patterson told the workers, "On the weapons you turn out depend the lives of thousands of American fighting men. We cannot, we must not fall down on the job. I return you to Admiral in New York.
As you've heard from Columbia's correspondents, this has been a week of victory for Allied armies in the West, and our big drive is still in motion. General Eisenhower's forces have unhinged the entire German front from Holland down to the Saar Basin. Allied airmen have given Germany the worst pounding yet. And on the other side of the Reich, the Russian armies are regrouping their forces, bringing up fresh men and supplies, preparing for another heavy punch. Just a minute ago, Marshal Stalin announced that Soviet troops have broken through to the Baltic near Kolberg in Pomerania, cutting off Danzig and Gdynia, the Polish corridor, and the eastern half of Pomerania. And now let's go back and review the events as they happened. The new American offensive was set up 3 weeks ago when the Canadian First Army went over to the attack at the northern end of the Siegfried Line in the Gulk and Klaver area. The Germans were forced to send reinforcements northward to try to stem this drive, and then General Patton's Third Army far to the south uncorked a right hook that drew off more German troops. Then, though German Marshal von Rundstedt knew a real haymaker was coming in the center of the line in the Ruhr region, his front was weakened by attacks on the northern and southern flanks. The American 1st and 9th began to move straight toward the Rhine between Jülich and Düren. The Germans were forced to fall back. The 9th then changed direction, drove north to meet the Canadian 1st between the Maas and the Rhine. The American 1st Army split into two spearheads, one pointed toward Cologne, the other to the south between Bonn and Koblenz. At the same time, the 3rd Army captured Trier and cleared the Moselle route to the Rhine at Koblenz. Today, Cologne is under shell fire. Many small German industrial cities in the Ruhr and Rhineland are in our hands. The suburbs of Dusseldorf have been entered, and the Germans are pulling out, moving across the Rhine, blowing bridges behind them. A vital phase in the war in the West is almost complete. In the Pacific, it was a grim and bloody week with American Marines slowly pushing the Japs off the tiny piece of land known as Iwo Jima, a strategic island on the bomber route to Japan. That fight goes on today with our troops less than 1/2 mile from the northern tip of the island. In the Philippines, General MacArthur's landing forces went ashore on Palawan against only light opposition and made rapid gains. Palawan borders the Jap lifeline through the South China Sea. American planes hit Jap holdings all the way from Tokyo to Singapore, bombing aircraft plants, military installations, and enemy defenses. American warships lobbed shells on a tiny island 350 miles from the Jap mainland. The Ryukyus were blasted by carrier planes. It wasn't a good week from the Jap side either. And now, once again, here is Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral.
Today, a beautiful new Admiral radio phonograph with automatic record changer must necessarily remain a dream to you and to countless others. But the day draws steadily nearer when you'll see that dream come true. Then you'll revel in newfound musical enjoyment. The post-war Admiral record changer will amaze you with its almost human precision and trouble-free operation. You'll be able to load your changer with 10 or 12 of your favorite records, set the volume just the way you like it, and really enjoy the music without going near the instrument. Yes, your dream of an Admiral radio phonograph with automatic record changer is a dream that will come true after victory. Until then, every Admiral facility, every Admiral employee is busily engaged in producing the electronic tools for that victory. Admiral employees deserve the lion's share of the credit, too. Production during a year just passed was 3 times that of the previous year. But when victory comes, you can make your dream come true with an Admiral radio, America's smart set. The Army must have more nurses. 10,000 more nurses must be enrolled in the Army Nurse Corps now. There are in the country now 29,000 registered nurses under 45 years of age who have retired from active nursing, with an equal number of the same age group in private nursing. If you are an eligible registered nurse, please investigate now and find out how urgently your services are needed in the victory effort of our armed forces. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set, and post-war makers of Admiral dual-temp refrigerators, Admiral home freezers, Admiral electric ranges. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Admiral brings you World News Today by shortwave, direct from leading news centers of the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.